Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to episode 197 of Geek Town Radio. I'm back this week with Bex. How are you doing?
Hello. I'm really tired, but it's because MCM is awesome, so that's all good.
Yes. We're trying to keep the energy levels up, but I'm exhausted as well because we've both been at MCM Birmingham for the last few days. So how was the con for you?
Nerve-wracking and awesome, I think is the two words I would use to sum up MCM this time.
Yes. Nerve-wracking because?
Because as a last minute replacement, I was called upon to host a panel on the Maid stage on Saturday.
Yes, you did a really good job. I thought you stepped in very well on that. What was the panel for? Well, I know what was the panel for, but tell the listeners what was the panel was for.
I know you though. You were there in the front row just to sort of come and giggle at me as I
yes, I was
held a panel with 5 minutes notice, and it was a really awesome opportunity. I was like incredibly flattered to be asked to step in and do that, and of course they wanted me because it was an indie comics panel. It was primarily about the new comic, The Theory, by T-Pub, the guys that do Twisted Dark. So it was Neil and some other guys that had worked on the comic with him doing a panel on collaborative comic making. And we took a lot of questions from the audience. So I got to run around the audience asking people questions. And it was good fun. I wasn't quite prepared for how many people were there. I was quite impressed that MCM Birmingham, that many people wanted to come out and talk to us about indie comics. I thought that was amazing. When I walked out onto the stage, I hadn't seen the crowd before I walked onto the stage because we had very little time between each panel because one of the panels had been moved to Saturday because there was a scheduling issue. So they had worked really hard to move the panels around, but it meant we only had 5 minutes between each panel. So I didn't have time to sort of go around and look at the front and see how many people were there. I just saw that when I walked out onto the stage. I think I managed to style that out fairly well, but I was both terrified and really impressed that so many people in Birmingham would come out and have to chat to us about the indie comics.
It was a large crowd for an indie comic panel. I mean, usually what happens with the MCM stuff is people will come in and sort of sit and take their places if there's another good panel coming afterwards as well. So I don't know what was timed before or afterwards, but yes, I was really impressed that there was a lot of people that decided to stay and watch the indie comic panel. And there was, you were talking to the T-Pub guys afterwards and said they've been getting orders based off the panel, so clearly you did your job. So
yeah, and lots of people in the audience had questions. I only got a fraction of the questions. There were so many people with their hands up, and that was really awesome to see as well. So I think a lot of people were there because they were interested in learning more about the comic making process.
Yeah,
and I think as the comic audience is growing, a lot of things with, you know, sort of the big companies like Marvel and so forth are doing movies, the audience are growing, and I think people are now finding indie comics a bit more, and they're starting to get a bit more coverage. And The Theory is an anthology, like a series of connected but seemingly unconnected stories, sort of going towards the same as they did with Twisted Dark. They seem unconnected, but there's actually a big massive plan, but it's sci-fi based this time.
Yeah,
and I think that and some of the awesome names that he got involved to do some of the artwork and some of the stories pulled in a reasonable crowd, and I thought that's an awesome place for me to start because that's the largest stage that I've presented on. I'm used to doing more side stage panels and things, so that was my first time on a big proper stage with blinding lights and the works.
Yeah, and it really are blinding lights up there. But I've picked up a copy of The Theory. I'm quite interested in it. I have got Twisted Dark, but I'm not hugely into the horror stuff, so I I'm not massively into those as much as some of their other books, like Tabitha, I think is great, which is also kind of, is a sort of horror related thing, but it's got some great humor in there as well. And they've got Theatrics and Turncoat, which are both great books as well. But I'm quite interested to read The Theory, given that it's that sort of anthology kind of idea, but done with sci-fi. So yes, I'm very much looking forward to reading that. I have picked up my copy of it. What else were you doing while you were there?
I spent a bit of time helping out / hanging out with the guys from Silver Sabres, who were booked out instantly from the moment the con opened. So that was awesome. They were raising a lot of money for charity and teaching people the basics of lightsaber fighting. So that was pretty cool. They had a nice large arena so they could do some awesome display fighting as well and show off all of their mad skills. Mm-hmm. And I actually had a slightly more chilled one. I was interviewed by another channel sort of saying, what are you doing this MCM? And I was like, actually, nowhere near as much as normal. Mm-hmm. I've spent a lot of time catching up with people and speaking to, there was quite a few new comics guys, indie comics guys I hadn't spoken to before. And a lot of them they're slightly before the point where I feel I can interview them and promote them. They're kind of on the beginning of that journey, but some awesome ideas. There was a gentleman whose name I cannot remember off the top of my head, but he's doing augmented reality.
Oh, cool.
So he's working in AR into the artwork he's doing, which will then, he hopes, to work into comic books. So you'll be able to hold your phone over it and the image will move and move out the page and things. So some really, really interesting stuff coming up that I'm going to then speak to those guys again at London MCM and see where they are. So that was good. Lots of actual socializing. It's very unusual for me to do some actual socializing at MCM and not just hours and hours of filming. I think I knew after being on the main stage, I would need to just chill for a bit.
Yes. What you're saying is you're usually quite antisocial, is what you're saying.
I'm usually just filming the whole time and then asleep.
Yes. That's the life of somebody who in former life was a cat, basically.
Except cats don't do all the work. They just do the sleep.
Yes, that is true. Well, they hunt for mice, as my younger cat has been proving over the last few days. But for me, it was a mixture of taking lots and lots of cosplay photos, which the edits of those are starting to go up over on the Instagram channel. So that's Geekdown UK if you want to go and check those out. And I'm starting to do edits of those. Wandering around in cosplay myself, I was in my Red Hood cosplay, which is slightly tweaked and revamped for this year, which I'm quite happy with. I have to say, Red Hood, when I started doing that cosplay about 4 years ago, it was very difficult to find people doing Red Hood, which is what I quite liked about it. And I walked in on Saturday morning and saw 5 within 30 minutes.
You're a trendsetter.
Yes,
that's what
clearly.
It is. You've set a trend.
Clearly. And it has nothing to do with the fact that DC released a DC animated Red Hood, Under the Red Hood cartoon. I'm sure that has nothing to do with the fact that Jason Todd has been in Titans. You know, I'm sure neither of those things have anything to do.
Coincidence. It's clearly all down to you. Yes. Did you go and see any of the gaming section? There was a Replay Events had a big retro gaming section
I didn't get a chance to look at it. Yes, I can't remember what it was called because it was renamed something else, because it's just branded Replay Events, but I think they branded it something else, this one, if I remember correctly. But there was a whole bunch of retro gaming. There was some VR stuff there as well, I seem to notice.
Yeah, there was. It was a good mix. I quite liked having that area there. I think people were using it as a very handy place to deposit children for a little bit as well.
Yes, always useful.
Seeing little kids playing as they had a Power Stone, which I loved. They had a lot of N64s and some of the old consoles and things. So that was quite good to see the little kids learning the ways of 16-bit gaming.
Yes.
Gaming at its best.
Yes, absolutely. Saturday, I did quite a lot of interviews because they lined them all up for the one day. So that was quite nice because we got to get all the interviews out of the way on one day and got like Sunday to do other stuff. So in terms of the guests that were there, Asa Butterfield from Sex Education, the series with Gillian Anderson, was there but didn't do any press. I don't know whether he did a panel, actually. I'm not sure. But he didn't do any press, so I didn't really see anything of him other than kind of catching him signing stuff. Felicia Day didn't do any press, but she did do a couple of panels, one with Ostrich Chow, who played Kevin on Supernatural, and Felicia obviously played Charlie on Supernatural. So that was really good. I caught their panel on the Saturday, and then Felicia did one on her own on the Sunday. They were really funny. I mean, Felicia Day's wonderful and was answering loads of questions from the audience. So they were really good. Really enjoyed those. Veronica Taylor, who we've done a few times before, who is the voice of Ash in Pokemon and plays April in the Turtles cartoon. She's lovely, and we did a video interview with her, so she's be going up on there. Rupert Young and Alexander Vlahos, who played Merlin, Sir Leon, and Mordred. Alexander also has a character in Versailles as well. Did an interview with those guys. Ian Beatty, who plays Marilyn Trant, and Miltos, I want to say Yararolu, who plays Sirio, both from Game of Thrones. So I think Miltos is the first time we've seen him at a con. Ian's there all the time, but they're great. It's quite funny because one killed the other in the show, so that's always a nice bit of rivalry
doing the interview. Good for them to sort of work through that on stage in a public forum.
Yes, totally. So there's an interview with them going up. We did a little interview with Mark Ryan, who that was really random because we were sat chatting in the press room waiting for the next interview to turn up, and he wandered into the press room and goes, oh, I was told to come down here for an interview. Nobody had told us he was coming. So he just sort of came in and we're like, oh, okay then. And sort of he went round and sat down. We had no idea who he was. He introduced himself. We were like, oh, all right then. Yes, go on, talk. So we had like a sort of 10 minutes with him unexpectedly. And that kind of came out of nowhere. But Mark Ryan plays Gates in Black Sails. He's the voice of Bumblebee in Transformers and played Nazir in Robin of Sherwood as well. So yeah, he was really interesting. He was very kind of up and exciting. We also did Emmy Raver-Lampman and Tom Hopper, who are Allison and Luther from Umbrella Academy. They were fabulous. It was Emmy's first con. Tom's done a number of them because he's been in a million different franchises. So they were really great. You'll get to hear that interview later on because I'm going to put it on the show. So that's the interview for this week. And Charles Martinet, who is the voice of Mario, also got to interview him. He is exactly what you hope the voice of Mario is.
Awesome.
He's really bubbly, up, loves his job. He walked in, immediately started doing lines from Mario. He was just a joy. He's the type of person you want to be able to bottle and sell. He just has really infectious energy to him. Just wonderful and really, really lovely. So I think he was one of my favorite interviews this weekend just because he was such a happy person to talk to. So there was a really nice selection of interviews. And they actually, I mean, with the exception of those one or two people like Felicia Day and Asa Butterfield, they managed to pull a whole bunch of people into the press room, which is not always the case. So MCM did a great job sorting that out this time around. So there's lots and lots of interviews going to be going up on the YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/geektown. So go and check those out. They'll be dropping over this week up on there. In terms of other stuff, I mean, lots of decent cosplay. Anything in particular that leapt out at you?
A bunch of my friends went as Jawas.
Yes, I have a photo of those.
Eyes and soundboards hidden in their clothing so they could press and trigger certain sound effects. They also had a very, very cute baby Jawa made out of a baby doll, which also had light up eyes and little pouches. And that was pretty awesome. And they tend to run around with lots of Star Wars screens and hand them out to children and things.
Aww, it's very cool.
Which is really sweet. And they're very, very funny. Although I think they partly do dress up as Jawas so they can just run around annoying people.
Yes, the Jawas, the shows are always extremely entertaining. They're just sort of, I've bumped into them before in London and they're kind of, they'll come around and harass people and they're really funny, really, really entertaining. And they'll kind of, they'll pick up stuff and kind of start to wander off with it as Jawas do, you know.
So. I finally got to chat to the people that are always at Comic-Con as the people from the Holy Grail, Monty Python.
Yes.
And get a couple of photos with them holding the holy hand grenade. I'm not sure I should be given the holy hand grenade.
No.
And also being attacked by the killer bunny.
Yes. There's a few photos of that got up on, they're on your Instagram, aren't they? So
yeah, that was great fun. And there was How to Train Your Dragon group, which included a really, really good Toothless.
Yes.
So I got photos of them as well. That was awesome.
Yeah. There was some really great cosplays. So one of the best ones I saw was a guy who had made a Warhammer 40,000 librarian costume, which if you don't know Warhammer 40,000, that sounds like it's going to be something really dull, but the Warhammer, he he's like a full Warhammer 40,000 armor. It's covered in these tiny little skulls, and the detailing on it is just incredible. It was just a phenomenal, I don't know how long it took him to make, but it's a phenomenal bit of work. There'll be a photo of that going up on the Instagram relatively soon. And I just incredible, some of the cosplay this time around. I really, really enjoyed just seeing various different people work.
Yeah, I got to see a lot more of it as well. But doing the less work and the more socializing, I got to go and chat to more of the cosplayers and see more of the costumes and just generally see more of the show as well, which was quite nice. I quite enjoyed that. But there were some incredibly impressive people, and as much cosplay as you get in the bigger London shows as well. The percentage of people in cosplay is just as high up in Birmingham, which was quite cool.
Yeah, it's great just to see people come out. And the amount of people, particularly, it was interesting with the guests. A lot of the guests kind of were coming in and were saying one thing they love about particularly the MCM one, the Comic Cons, is just how lovely and friendly and happy environment it is for people. And they love the fact that people come in costume and, you know, you've got guys dressed as girls and girls dressed as guys and all that sort of stuff. And nobody cares. And it's all really nice and it's all really friendly. And that's why a lot of the guests love doing it. It's just a really, really pleasant environment to be in. So that was really lovely to hear from a variety of the guests that were coming in, and they were sort of saying that in interviews, and I wholeheartedly agree. It's, I mean, they're lovely shows to go to. They're really, really friendly and lovely places to be. So if you've got an MCM coming nearby, there's London, Birmingham, Manchester. They still do one in Scotland, don't they, as well? I think so. And they do about 80 a year, so they are around if you want to go and look them up. But mcmcomiccon.com is the address for that. They're well worth going to. So anything else from MCM for you?
I think you've covered a fair amount of it. after I spent some time recovering from being on stage and then talking to all of the people playing some of the games and running around and reading all of the comics, I was quite exhausted and spent a reasonable amount of time playing Cards Against Humanity in the hotel.
Yes, always good. Always
and
good fun.
Being slightly frustrated on the Friday that I couldn't watch the latest episode of Star Trek Discovery because I'd gone up the day before and didn't have my Netflix login.
Oh no, I know. Yes, it's got a good episode this week. Good episode. So yes, something to look forward to when you get off this podcast, I guess, if you haven't watched it yet. That's sort of it for MCM. Couple of other little things this week. The Rookie, new show started on Sky One with Nathan Fillion, who I adore. Nathan Fillion, he's fabulous. Interesting new show, has a sort of vibe of 911, the Ryan Murphy series to it, in that you're following a sort of street level cop. He plays the oldest rookie cop in the LSPD, basically. It's based on a true story, bizarrely, but so he's a rookie cop, but he's Nathan Fillion's age. and it's about him working for the LAPD, and it sort of follows various events as they're kind of going through this sort of day-to-day street level stuff. So remind me a little bit of 911, because that's sort of what 911 does. But yeah, really fun, really, really good series. It's a bit more drama than dramedy possibly, but it has got funny moments in it. So we'll definitely, I mean, Nathan Fillion's just amazing to watch. So go and check that out. It's on Sky One. And there was a gaming announcement this week. Vampire the Masquerade Bloodlines is getting a sequel. They're making a second one of it. Do you know that video game? It was a card game as well, I think, as well.
It was a role-playing game, which I used to play when I was a teenager. Yes. I haven't actually played the computer game version, but that's interesting that that's making a comeback, being that it has ties to the role-playing game world and the D&D world type area, and that's getting a sequel. Interesting. What platform is that going to come out on?
It will be cross-platform, that I believe. And it's coming fairly soon. They're actually saying 2020, although, I mean, early 2020 as well, although with all these sorts of things, the release dates tend to slip. But been made by Paradox Interactive, who were a really great company. Paradox Interactive are one of those companies where you suddenly start realizing that you've got quite a lot of Paradox Interactive games without really realizing it, because they have quite a good variety of sort of things, from FPS, RPG, city builders, all that sort of stuff. So there's quite a strong mix that they publish. They acquired White Wolf's properties and the option to make games out of them in 2015. Vampire Masquerade is a White Wolf property. So Yeah, it was quite nice. The company that's making it is called Hard Suit Labs, and they apparently hired the original writer of the first game and then approached Paradox to say, hey, we'd be quite interested in making a sequel, and they kind of leapt at the chance. So it's got the same writer behind it, because the first game had quite a lot of issues technically, and then the company that made the first game went under. It was Troika, and they went under fairly quickly after it was released, but the fan community stepped in and patched it and then found a bunch of extra content which Troika hadn't finished, so they patched all that back in as well. So there's an unofficial patch which expands and fixes the game, so it got quite a lot of praise for the storyline, but it was quite buggy. So, but if you get the unofficial patch for it, you can go and buy it and play through it, and it is a fabulous game. You basically get to play one of the vampire clans, and it's all set in modern day LA, and you play as this creature of the night, and that includes a vampire clan where you're a horribly disfigured vampire, so you've got to stay in the shadows the entire time so people don't realize you're a vampire. The second game is apparently based around a mass vampiric embrace, which is the vampiric embrace is the thing that makes humans sort of fall under the spell of the vampires, and there's somebody has sort of put this large embrace around this bunch of people in Seattle, and it's causing havoc across all the clans because nobody agreed to it apparently. So that's the sort of basis of the second one, but I'm quite interested to see where they go with it, so I'm very excited for that. But it's Vampire the Masquerade Bloodlines 2, and that is coming out, at the moment it's pitched for early 2020, so keep an eye out for that. So that's all the news for this week. Next we'll move on to some TV and film news. So TV and film news this week, renewals, cancellations and pickups. There was a great disturbance in fandom as a million voices cried out in terror. Supernatural is coming to an end with season 15. It had to happen at some point. 15 seasons is a pretty astounding run. I adore Supernatural. I will be very sad to see it go. It was the decision of Jensen and Jared, by the sounds of it, because the CW had always said, as long as the boys want to make it and the numbers are still there, which they have been, we will still put it on air. So it sounds like Jensen and Jared basically decided that they wanted to move on after 15 years and do other things, which is entirely understandable. So it's shame to see it go, but at least they're going to end it on their own terms and stuff. Obviously you're aware of Supernatural. Have you been watching it recently?
I do love Supernatural. It's an incredibly fun show with a remarkably likable cast, considering half of them are evil and trying to, you know, destroy the world and little quirks of their personality like that. It's such an epic show with such a wonderful and loyal fandom. And I suspect even just you mentioning it in this podcast has caused a cry as we're recording, not even as they hear it, just they know we're saying this.
Yes.
And they will be crying out in terror because of that announcement. But I think if they're feeling like they're coming to a natural end with wanting to work on it, then they have to stop, really.
Yeah.
You have to be enjoying writing it to keep writing it. And if they want a break, I'm sure they could resurrect it in future if they so desired, or create spin-offs. There's enough awesome side characters and other people in the cast. If they wanted to make spin-off series or one-offs, they certainly could. And I'm sure it will continue in comic books and books and other forms as well anyway.
Yeah, I mean, it's the spin-off thing has been difficult for them, because every time they've presented a spin-off, they've done it two or three times now, and every time they've presented a spin-off to the CW have rejected it because they are sort of feeling that the show is Jensen and Jared, and they're not convinced that it sort of continues without it. And I think that's probably a mistake. There was a lot of love for the Wayward Sisters spin-off, which was pitched last year, and that didn't get picked up, and there was a lot of fans very upset that that didn't get picked up. But
and I think Felicia Day could hold a spin-off series as well.
Oh yeah, totally.
And the boys could just drop in occasionally.
Yeah. I mean, I would like to see sort of something. There was a really, really sweet photo that Stephen Amell of Arrow posted that basically was him, I think, with Jared saying our first meeting of the soon-to-be unemployed actors club went really well. And they were kind of sat having a drink together. Yeah, I mean, I hope in season 15 they managed to rope in Stephen Amell for one episode, because they've been threatening to do that crossover for ever since like Arrow came on air and they were kind of shooting next door to each other. So yeah, I hope they managed to sort of rope in some sort of crossover in the Arrow final season and the Supernatural final season.
Well, even that if it's not good. An actual crossover, yeah, and they just rope Amell in order to be an unfeasibly good archer for no apparent reason.
Yeah, yeah.
There'll be a way to do it.
Yeah, I mean, I love the fact that it's like they dropped in a reference to Jeffrey Dean Morgan a few episodes back, who I know has since made a reappearance in Supernatural, but they dropped in a reference where they put Lucille Negan's bat on the table, and it's sort of the bat with the barbed wire, and one of them picks it up and goes, "Oh, Dad, I'd love this," and like kind of puts it on a shelf somewhere. I just think it's other little references like that are great, but I do hope that they managed to do something together that would be quite good fun to see. So yeah, Supernatural going, we've still got the 14th season to arrive. It is going to be coming soon on E4. They still haven't set the date yet. They've not pulled their finger out. They will do it at some point. It's going to arrive at some point in the spring. That was the last thing they told me. So it will arrive soon. It's just not scheduled yet. And then they've got season 15, which will be end of this year, next year in the US, and probably next year for us. So there is one more season to come. They will end it well. I'm sorry to see it go, but you know, things come to an end. In terms of other shows, Tin Star has been renewed for a third and final season. That's the Tim Roth series. Apparently, they're moving the third season back to Liverpool. It's going to be set around Liverpool. It's been set in the Rocky Mountains up until now, so that's quite a shift. But yes, so I'm quite behind on the second season, but I'm like the fact that they've kind of ended that in a three-season run. You know, they're doing these things on Sky Atlantic where they're kind of, well, that's the story we've got to tell. You know, they're not kind of letting them just run on and on. They're just doing these short season run things of things. So yeah, Tin Star renewed for a third and final season. Amazon Prime have picked up American Gods for a third season, which has just started airing the second season on Amazon Prime and Stars as well, actually, which is the US network. That I'm quite happy to see back. I've seen the first two episodes of the second season, and that's really good. Just announced today, Marvel's Runaways renewed for a third season, which is fine. I'm sort of, it's a kind of second tier Marvel show as far as I'm concerned. I'm sort of enjoying it, but it's kind of watchable enough. Have you seen any of Runaways?
Only the first couple of episodes.
Yeah.
It's on the list of things to watch, but it's not at the top of my list of things to watch.
Yeah, that's sort of how I feel about it. It's fine, and there's not a whole lot of other things on at the moment, but it's not one that's like a must-watch thing for me. I'm enjoying it. It's perfectly fine. It's funny, and it's a nice little Marvel show, but it's not kind of, doesn't leap out at me as being kind of a really big thing. But I'm glad it's back for a third season. That's good. Netflix have announced the new Ryan Murphy series, which is called The Politician. I think this is the first thing to come out of the Netflix Ryan Murphy deal, which he did last year for some insane amount of money. That's called The Politician. It's going to be premiering in September. The logline for it says it's a dark comedy which follows Peyton Hobart, a wealthy student at Santa Barbara, California, who has known since the age of 7 he's going to be president of the United States. But first, he'll have to navigate the most treacherous political landscape of all, St. Sebastian's High School, to get elected a student body president, secure a spot at Harvard, and stay on his singular path to success. Peyton will have to outsmart his ruthless classmates without sacrificing his own morality and carefully crafted image. That's the setup for it. It's interesting to see Ryan Murphy going back to sort of his more Glee era kind of high school backstabbing kind of things, which I think could be quite interesting. I love Ryan Murphy stuff. I mean, he's the guy behind 9-1-1, Pose, American Crime Story, American Horror Story, Feud, a million other things. So yeah, I'm sort of interested to see where he goes with this. Politics and high school could be kind of interesting. Ben Platt, who is in Pitch Perfect, is taking the lead role, but it's also got people like Gwyneth Paltrow in it, Jessica Lange, Zooey Deutch, Lucy Boynton, There's a whole bunch of other people as well. So yeah, it's got a good cast to it. I think Warren Murphy things are always worth a watch. So that's one to keep an eye out for. It's called The Politician. It's coming to Netflix in September. That. Moving on to bigger stories, they've announced the cast for Amazon's Dark Tower pilot. So first of all, Amazon are making a Dark Tower pilot. If you didn't know that, that is coming. The two people that have been cast as the lead roles are Sam Strike and Jesper Pakkeren, who is a Danish actor who you might know from Vikings. Sam Strike, I believe, was in EastEnders, but he's been in Night Flyers as well more recently, and he's about to be in the Sky Atlantic series Chernobyl as well. Are you a fan of The Dark Tower? I know they did a movie recently, and it's a Stephen King book series. I didn't see the film, which apparently was probably for the best by the sounds of the reaction it got.
Yeah, I haven't seen the film and I haven't read the book. It is slightly more on the, obviously it's Stephen King, so it is slightly horror, more on the horror kind of side, but it is quite a mashup of genres. It's quite an interesting book and it's one I probably should have read and may go away and get a hold of a copy of now, to be honest, so I can delve a bit more into it.
The book's basically a mashup of sort of fantasy, sci-fi, Wild West and Arthurian legend, which is kind of an interesting mix. It follows a guy called Roland, who is the last living member of a knightly order known as the Gunslingers, last of the line of Arthur Eld. TV drama is set to take place early on in the novel series. So the movie was kind of, I think actually was an adaptation of The Dark Tower, the book, but there is a whole novel series of it. And this TV series is going to take place in an earlier part of that. The main antagonist is called the Man in Black, and Sam Strike is playing the Gunslinger, and Jasper's playing the Man in Black in it. It's hopefully a bit of a redemption for people that absolutely loathed the Idris Elba Matthew McConaughey movie, because apparently that did not land well with fans. And the TV series was originally planned as a spin-off of the movie, and they rapidly changed that idea when the fan reaction to the film came out. So it's now not going to be that. It's going to be a much closer adaptation to the original source novels, is the plan. It is only a pilot at the moment, so it's going to start shooting apparently in the next few months once they've got the casting sorted. Beyond that, we don't know. It might not go to series. It might. It's not like Amazon are exactly short of things to licenses and stuff. I mean, they've got like Lord of the Rings and they've got various other sci-fi things going on. So it's not like they're short of things to work on at the moment. But we'll let you know if that goes to series and we hear more about it. Moving over onto CBS in the US, they have got a new show coming. It's a pilot. It's a new up-to-date version of Frankenstein called Alive is the idea for it. It stars Ryan Phillippe, Karina Law and Aaron Staton. It centers on Mark Escher, who is played by Ryan Phillippe, and he is a San Francisco police investigator who is presumed dead after an attack and destructive fire at his home. 6 months later, he shockingly reappears and is reunited with his wife, played by Katrina Law. But something has changed. A shadow has fallen across his sunny disposition, and he's haunted by the visions of the case that he was working on before he died. He and Elizabeth will seek answers about who shot and abducted him and what was done to him. Elizabeth is a pathologist, a medical examiner who's stunned when her husband reappears. She's thrilled to have him back, but knows there is a secret behind his disappearance, and she thinks she knows who is responsible. And that man is Aaron Staton's Victor Frankenstein, who is a brilliant, if slightly odd, driven scientist working on secret cutting-edge projects. So yeah, I mean, it's an interesting sort of up-to-date version of Frankenstein. I swear they did a show like this not that long ago, which lasted one season, which was a sort of similar premise. They're trying it again, but it does seem like they've already been down this road already.
I think it depends on what they put the emphasis on, because you've got a mix here of somebody trying to solve a crime that's haunting them type narrative. You've also got the whole amnesiac, don't know what's happened to yourself kind of narrative. I guess a bit of an origin story for Frankenstein's monster, but not type of thing. Or it could go off into the sort of crazy science getting out of hand ethics, and we can, but should we kind of, I think it depends which thing they're focusing on.
Yeah.
It's really hard to tell at the moment. exactly what kind of show it's going to be, because there's so many things going on.
I don't know. I mean, it's an interesting enough cast that they've got. I mean, Ryan Phillippe, people will know from Shooter, which was cancelled not that long ago. Played Sebastian in Cruel Intentions. I think that's where a lot of people will know him from. Katrina Law, who has been starring in The Oath and Sacred Lies recently. She's probably best known as Nissa Al Ghul on Arrow, though, for people in the UK. Aaron Stanton was in Narcos Mexico and Castle Rock. For a lot of gamers, though, he'll be known as Cole from L.A. Noire, who is the main star of L.A. Noire, the Rockstar video game. So, yeah, I think the cast is quite good. And it is only a pilot again at the moment. It's written and produced by a guy called Jason Tracy. He's previously worked on Elementary and Burn Notice. So, I mean, given that he's worked on Elementary, that might give you some idea of the tone of it, because Elementary was also a CPS show as well. So
And I loved Elementary. I felt that didn't get anywhere near as much attention as it deserved. It was very well written, very enjoyable, managed to mix some quite dark elements with a lot of very dry comedy, and done very well.
Yeah, I'm very much with you on Elementary. I like that show a lot. And, you know, I'll be sad to see that one go, because that's coming to an end as well. I think that gives you an idea of probably where the tonally where it's probably going to be. The director for it has worked on Stranger Things, Jessica Jones and Westworld. So, well, the person that's directing the pilot, quite often then just do the pilot and then move on in a lot of cases. So it is only a pilot at the moment. It's quite possible it won't get picked up to series. It's called Alive. We'll let you know if we hear any more about that. We are going to get more and more pilots coming up as we head up into the next sort of month or so, because May is when everything gets picked up and renewed. That's when it all goes like crazy and they go cancel mad, and we get the bloodbath of everything being cancelled and everything being renewed and the pilots being picked up. So over the next month or so, you'll start to get more and more pilot news. And lastly, major news this week that the Disney Fox merger or acquisition, Disney's acquisition of Fox, has finally happened. It is now complete after many, 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 many months. So that means that Disney now control things such as The Simpsons, Avatar, Deadpool, and X-Men, which is cool. The acquisition includes 20th Century Fox, Fox Searchlight Pictures, Fox 2000 Pictures, Fox Family, Fox Animation, Fox Television Creative Units, 20th Century Fox Television, FS Productions, Fox 21, FX Networks, National Geographic, Fox Network Group International, Star India, Fox's interest in Hulu, and Endemol Shine Group, and Tata Sky. So, yeah, I mean, it cost them a lot of money, but they did get quite a lot for it as well. Just put the interesting position that it now means that things such as the Avatar franchise is now a Disney property. Aliens and Predators are also Disney properties. Planet of the Apes, Buffy and Angel are now Disney properties. X-Files, 24 franchise, Family Guy, Die Hard, Deadpool, as I mentioned, is now a Disney property. I'm sure that will come up in the next Deadpool movie. Fantastic Four and X-Men are all now Disney properties, which means they are now available to the MCU moving forward. So, yeah, I do wonder whether now this is complete, whether they'll rush to film something that gets tagged on to the end of Endgame, which has a mutant turn up.
just like, you know, they all go for tea or something.
Yeah.
Just everyone's there as the post-credit scene, just kind of like, oh, hi. Yeah. Yeah. Welcome to the team.
Even if it was, I mean, you could do it without actually having the actor there, of having just the last end credit scene, just a Wolverine claw coming out, you know, just a shot of that, of like the sort of snick and the claws coming out. The audience would just go nuts. So
it's going to be interesting to see what gets rebooted, what gets recast.
Yeah.
And what tweaks they need to make, because the MCU has a very, very distinct tone and has a very strong plan that's been in place for a long time. And then this is a whole lot of new characters. So they've sort of been working around not having those characters for some things. For people that know the comic books that have been adapted into some of the movies, they have worked around things in certain ways. So are they going to start trying to include them, or trying to retrospectively give them a place within some of the previous timelines, albeit somewhere else? Because the S.H.I.E.L.D. TV series, they set around bits in the MCU without entirely crossing over, but giving them just a place around those timelines. And they could almost do that maybe if they wanted to kind of make them feel more seated, or maybe they'll just start them as fresh things and then tie them in later after they've established them singly, as they did with the original characters at the start of the MCU.
Yeah. I rather think it's not like Kevin Feige hasn't known, who's the co-president of Marvel Studios, hasn't known this was coming. So he says they haven't actually started properly planning anything yet, but it wouldn't surprise me if there was some ideas percolating about what they could do with them. Because he has said the notion of the characters coming back is great. He said they haven't...
It's going to be interesting for anyone that wasn't too keen on the latest Captain Marvel movie, because we all know in the original timelines and comic books, what happens when you put Rogue and Ms. Marvel in a room together.
Right.
Because in the comic books originally, Rogue gained the powers of flight and super strength by taking them from Ms. Marvel.
Ah, interesting. Okay. Yeah.
So that might be a way of... opinion of X-Men fans like me of fixing Rogue. although I have not seen the Captain Marvel movie myself, I've heard some interesting mixed reviews. And because that character has such a strong tie to the X-Men, it's going to be interesting to see how that might work going forward as well.
Ah, that's interesting. Yeah, I mean, because I don't know the Captain Marvel comic books. So I went into the film somewhat blind. And I enjoyed the film quite a lot. I thought it was fun and perfectly decent addition to the franchise. I do feel slightly sorry for Scarlett Johansson, who's been plugging away at this for 10 years, and some upstart comes along and gets the first female Marvel movie. But, you know, so I thought the movie was perfectly fine, but then I'm not comparing it to any of the comic books. So
the comic books have gone through a lot of changes, I think, as well.
Yes. I mean, Marvel timelines are all over the place. So
wibbly wobbly timey wimey, I think would be the technical phrase they might use.
Yes, very, very much with the Marvel stuff. I think it's fair to say it's probably the end of the McAvoy Fassbender franchise and the Patrick Stewart, Ian McKellen stuff. I think that will all go with the takeover, and Disney will want to reboot it, partly because you have to cast a new Wolverine, because I mean, much as I would love to see Hugh Jackman back, he has said that he's not doing it anymore, and I don't think you've managed to get him to come back again, having made sort of public thing about not doing it anymore.
So, I wonder if they'll specifically cast somebody shorter.
Yes, I suspect
they may. That was always the complaint,
do.
Was that he's amazing at Wolverine, but one of the things about Wolverine's character is he is much shorter than everybody else.
Yeah.
So maybe they will do that, because they're going to have to work very hard to find someone that the fans will accept as a replacement.
Yeah. And I mean, but one thing they've done very well in the MCU is casting. So I think that's going to be fine. I think they will find somebody that's reasonable. But because they've got to recast Wolverine, I suspect they'll recast everybody. You know, because that franchise has become a bit of a mess over at Fox.
It's half restarted itself, sort of prequeled but contradicted itself. And
yeah,
I'm not an incredible fan of those movies, as you know. No. So I did like some of the casting, and I thought there were some brilliant moments in them, but I never felt they were actually that coherent. And being a massive fan of the comic books, there were various bits that will not stop irking me as being better in the comic books that I felt was a missed opportunity when they didn't include them in the films. So I think this could be a really interesting opportunity to make a much stronger, coherent X-Men franchise. And if they could also tie that into the rest of the MCU, that would be amazing as well.
Yeah, I would very much like to see that. I'd be interested to see the Fantastic Four weaved back in as well. Because again, you're not going to see the iteration that they did last time. They're not going to make a reappearance after the panning that film got. I didn't think it was actually as bad as people made out, but then everybody had told me it was awful. So I went in with very low expectations. So, I'm rather a fan of the first two original Fantastic Four movies that they did. I rather like those two. So I'd be interested to see that coming back. Maybe not their own film initially, but it would be nice to see that all getting kind of molded together and everybody being in one place. I mean, they've even managed to get Spider-Man back. So I don't think there are any other properties that are anywhere else at this point. I mean, because they have the connection with Sony. So yeah, I think they now pretty much have everything under one roof, which is great news. Yeah.
The fact it's possible that one day we could get a crossover between the MCU, The Simpsons, Predator and Deadpool.
Yes, yeah, that's going to be very, very interesting. Deadpool himself, of course, they have said will probably be kept as a separate entity and they'll keep him at arm's length because he is very 18 rated and that's not really MCU appropriate. It would be nice if they could maybe drop him in, even if it's just in the odd post-credit thing. And
It gives them the opportunity to pull people the other way, though.
Yes.
If they don't want to include Deadpool in the regular MCU, they can always pull in some more other characters to cameo or be part of Deadpool, because he was seeming a little bit isolated where they, you know, couldn't mention really obvious ties to the X-Men. They couldn't, you know, mention anything like the Weapon X things apart from in by choosing particular songs with lyrics that are that mentioned these things. But I mean, they worked it in incredibly well and it was very funny the way they handled it. But now at least they'll have the freedom, hopefully, to use terminology that's relevant. And the X-Men will be called mutants and things again. And people in the other parts of the MCU will be called the correct titles we call them in the comics, because I think they were working around limitations a lot before.
Yeah. So we're interested to see how they handle Deadpool. But they have kind of said that they will probably keep it as a separate entity, which I think is fine. And I get that. Disney Plus streaming service, which is launching in the US later this year, hopefully worldwide after that. That, I think we've said before, has been kept strictly PG-13, so don't expect any of the Netflix Marvel shows to show up on that. But they do now have Hulu. They have a very large stake in Hulu, and they have the FX TV brand as well, which they are retaining. Both of those are possible new homes when the contract runs out with Netflix, because there's an exclusion of a couple of years on those as standard on Netflix contracts. So when those contracts run out, if you want to see the Marvel Netflix shows come back, they may pop up on something like Hulu or FX, but we'll have to wait and see for those. So yeah, all good, all good. I think this is good news. I wonder, as mentioned, Buffy and Angel now appear to be part of the Disney thing. I do wonder whether they may crop up in new iterations of some form. I mean, there was talk of them working on a new continuation of the Buffy franchise. I do wonder what's happening with that now it's moved over. We'll have to see. And you've obviously got things like Aliens and Predator and Die Hard and stuff like that, which isn't really Disney friendly. So the chances are it may have a Disney logo on it somewhere, but it will go out under a Fox brand or some other like newly created thing to house the more mature content. So that's all the news we've got for this week. Next up, we have the interview.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
So the interview this week, as I mentioned earlier, comes from MCM. It was with Emmy Raver-Lampman, who plays Allison, and Tom Hopper, who plays Luther, aka Spaceboy, in the Umbrella Academy. Tom, you will know from shows such as Black Sails, where he played Billy Bones, Merlin, where he played Sir Percival, Game of Thrones, where he played Dickon Tarly, and of course, Umbrella Academy. Emmy Raver-Lampman, she played Allison in Umbrella Academy. That's really her first major TV role, but she did play Angelica Schuyler in the first US tour of Hamilton as well. So she was one of the kind of early originators of Hamilton before she got into doing TV. She's got a few other TV projects coming up as well. So they were lovely. They were great. It was Tom's hundreds or so con, Emmy's first time. Just interesting having them both there. They were really nice and they were bouncing off each other quite well. So it's about 10 minutes long. Here's the interview with those guys. We will see you afterwards with some highlights for next week on TV. Oh, quick extra note. Forgot to mention, there are a couple of spoilers for Umbrella Academy in here. So if you've not seen your series yet and you're worried about spoilers, you might just want to skip over the interview. It's about 10 minutes long. Here's the interview with Emmy and Tom.
Are you enjoying yourself today?
Yeah, it's great.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you should probably ask it because it's like Emmy's first Because Netflix sent us to Brazil and to New York, but it was a very cultivated, like, sneak us in the back, we do a Q&A, and then we sneak out, and we didn't really just spend any time on the floor and, like, interact with any of the people there. Yeah. So it's been really awesome, really awesome to just be in the middle of it and, you know, see all the cosplay. And
yeah, it's
and
great. Everyone. It's great to see some Umbrella Academy cosplay, because I've not really seen any when I've done these things before. There might be the odd one hanging around, but there's been so many today now, the show's out. And it's great to see, you know, like, what the different takes are on the characters.
There's Klaus umbrellas, I've seen.
Yeah.
There's a lot of white classes. Violins, a lot of number fives.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, it's
Are
so
you
cool.
surprised by the show's the show's success, but how fast it's grown?
It has grown very fast, yeah.
I think it's the thing you always hope for. Like, you know, I don't think you set out to do any project being like, yes, this is it. This is going to be so big. But I think you hope that, you know, we had such a great time working on it and shooting it. And I think we just, and knowing that it's coming from the comics, wanting to, like, make the fan base that it already exists proud, and then hope that they understand and see, you know, the way the version that is now on their televisions and like it as much as we enjoyed it. But I definitely am shocked. I did not think it was, you know, we have no idea because Netflix holds all their numbers really close. But it sounds like they are very excited and have been.
And it's great to see the response from the fans, you know.
Yeah.
I think that's a good telling sign, you know, because until I turn up here today, you kind of get an idea that the show's doing well, a bit of online chat and stuff, and people calling you up and going, oh, what's the show, man? It's great. You know, that sort of thing.
What, just like that?
Yeah, exactly, just like that. I've got a friend.
He made too much fun of you. My face was getting red.
I need to stop making faces when there's not many cameras around. It's great to see the response from the people, you know, and seeing how excited they are about it, which is great because we are so excited about it.
Yeah.
So it's great.
Has it been a big response to the dancing? I think we're alone.
Which one?
Oh,
I think we're alone now.
Yeah. Oh, God, yeah.
That's a lot of people's favorite. Yeah. I think it comes at the perfect time in the pilot because it's so heavy and it's so dense and it's, like, really methodical and slow, and everyone, you're unpacking these characters, and it kind of comes at a moment where you're like, oh, God, I need a break from all the drama.
I think it's also, like, it's a great sort of indicator of
the style of the show.
Yeah, the style of the show that you never really know what's coming, and there's a quirkiness to it.
Yeah.
Is unexpected, and that's what carries on all the way through the show. So, the response has been brilliant for that. Yeah. And we had a great time doing it. Too much fun.
How hands-on were the creators? Because on shows like American Gods and Good Omens, Neil Gaiman is very much part of the show running now.
Yeah.
I wonder, because obviously this was the baby of Gabrielle Barr and Gerard Way.
Yeah.
I'm wondering whether they were, that's a long-winded question.
How
much involvement were they allowed to have on a series of this nature?
Yeah.
Well, the thing is with those two are the creators of the comic, and they were exec producers on the show, right? So they had a massive input. They were there right from the beginning, the development of the show. And then Steve Blackman, who is the head showrunner of the show, he's the one that the day-to-day, the genius of the show, really, the way it's scoped out is down to him, you know, and overseen by those guys who, you know, had the comic book in mind and the stories of the comic book.
Yeah.
But Steve Blackman is amazing, and he really deserves the credit for the show.
Yeah.
And one last question. So are you aware of the amazing graffiti street-level PR that's going on, including one in Digbeth in Birmingham that you're not going to see tonight because you're in a hotel here? But it's absolutely amazing by a guy called Jim Vision. He's a big graffiti artist.
Oh, yeah.
And apparently in a lot of cities around the world, you've got these absolutely huge, beautiful black and white piece of artwork from Umbrella Academy, and they're pretty magnificent.
I've seen one in Shoreditch. I took a selfie in front of it, Yeah.
Jim Vision's the guy behind it. Look up his artwork online. He's absolutely phenomenal.
I didn't really know that it was like a thing. Really,
there's one in Liverpool as well, right? Is that right?
Yeah. You haven't been robbed yet, though.
Really? Wow.
Did you go to the source material yourself as part of kind of your research, the comics?
I think we were encouraged to read it if we wanted to. There was zero pressure because I think Steve really wanted all of us to bring our own takes to the characters. But, you know, I absolutely wanted to know where we were coming from. So when I around the time that I was auditioning, I bought both of them and read them.
It was also the only thing we had apart from the pilot script, mm-hmm. is the only thing to draw from yeah. to kind of influence the character choices and stuff very early on. So I was the first one to be cast like in, I think it was like 2 or 3 months before someone else was cast. So I had this kind of empty time of going, I need to know more about the show. I need to know more about the character. And so I kind of immersed myself in the comics, you know, because it was the only thing I could draw from at that point. But they are a great influence. And I think it was really important to sort of find what people fell in love with in the characters in the comic books and then try and bring those things into the show.
During the series, there's a really great part for me that I found really moving with you. And you were talking to Pogo, and you found out there was, sorry for spoilers, guys, but there was no reason for you to be on the moon. And your response to that was so raw, so it was really pure. What do you do to prepare yourself for such a heartbreaking scene? Wing it, or do you have to
prepare? Or raw onions.
A right, lots of raw onions. it was just a pile of chopped onions. No, the thing is with something like that, you have to really get inside the character's head. You know, you have to think about what they would have been through. And for me, I was like, imagine, you know, being on your own for that long and thinking your whole life's purpose was for something that ended up being a lie. Yeah. And it was just for nothing. Like for me, that it just had to organically happen, you know, and it had to be something that I just felt, because if you force anything like that, mm-hmm. you know, the camera sees it all, so you have to feel it. It has to be raw. And sometimes it's not easy, you know. Sometimes but that's when it's a testament to the writing and how clear these characters are on the page. Like, I knew who Luther was. I knew what he'd been through. I felt like I was him at that point. So, like I say, you let it happen organically. You trust the things that are going on inside your head, you know, as that character.
The comic books have a very particular style to the artwork. When you were sort of, you know, you said you had a few months to look at it. When you were looking at it, did it sort of cross your mind of how on earth are they going to get that particular image translated into a TV show? I mean, I think they did a fantastic job of it.
I think the biggest one for us was Klaus. How are they going to do that? That's going to be crazy. But I think that also was Steve, was like, I love where this came from, and like the you know, all of these characters have so much to offer and there's so much going on and their powers are so unique and different. But I think he also was like, but I also really want to ground it in reality and kind of make it more about the drama, about the family dynamics, about the psyche of these characters, and not so much about, you know, Robert floating around the house and you know, David swimming a bunch.
Swimming around. Breathing underwater. I think he had to find a way of making the characters really relatable to everyday people. Mm-hmm. You know, I think if you just took it straight from the comics, it would feel so kind of out of this world that it's like, well, it's not really relatable, and that's what all of these characters are. They're all so different, but all very relatable in their own ways. They've all got very sort of earthy issues. Mm-hmm. You know, they've got all these issues that I'm sure a lot of people can relate to.
Yeah.
I was going to say, this is like your third kind of big franchise that you've been part of now.
Popular.
That says the Hamilton star.
Exactly right. Exactly.
I was going to ask, is this something you kind of get used to, or is it kind of hard to fit in with that huge fan base that follows it? And have you had to mentor Emmy through this, because it's quite a big thing?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, to answer the first part, I mean, I don't think you ever get used to it, no, because, and also you never really know when you're doing it, when you're making it, that it's going to be that. So this is the first Comic-Con thing that I've done since the show's been out. So this is my first kind of going, oh man, there's like a growing fan base here that's happened quickly.
Yeah.
So it has the potential to absolutely be another one of these kind of shows. But no, you never really get used to it. You sort of just take it in your stride, I guess, and just meet every individual person as they come along. As for Emmy, she doesn't need any.
Oh, shut up. I'm here because of him. He was like, because I knew because of Game of Thrones and Merlin and Black Sails that he kind of was in the con world and had been doing them. And I feel like you did one while we were shooting or something. I can't remember. But I was like, what is that? He was like, I got you. I'm here today because he introduced me to his agent. And I was like, I want to like be on the ground and like meet the people that love this show and love Gerard's and Gabriel's work. And it's really, really cool.
It's also the only, like, cause you obviously come from a musical theater background, right?
give us a song.
Exactly. and you get that immediate sort of fan response, right, yeah, when you're there, mm-hmm, in the moment. Whereas TV and film, you don't. So yeah, I always find that these things are a great way to see the reaction,
yeah,
that you don't immediately get. Mm-hmm. So you get to see what people really think about it. And it's really nice, you know.
Yeah.
What are your favourite moments from the season?
There's a few. We always see the group scenes, right?
Yeah.
We always say that they're really fun.
Any of the scenes that we were all together, because there's so many of us and all of our characters splintered off so many times, there's a lot of times where it would like just be Tom and I working for a week together, Ellen and I working for a week together, or like all of us, everyone kind of doing their own thing. So when we got to come together like as a group and work on a scene together, those were usually some of the best days, because we all just get on so well and really, really enjoy each other's company.
Yeah. And our characters are so different, you know, so when we do those scenes, it's so fun to play with, because we also got to know our characters and each other's characters quite quickly. Mm-hmm. So we kind of knew how to play with it, how to, you know, interact and ad-lib and do a bit of improvising and stuff. So, those moments are always great.
I think my favorite, I have like three of my favorite scenes are our dance, mm-hmm, are the end of episode 8 with Ellen and the... and then the phone booth scene.
Yeah, like, which was very last scene we shot on the show
of the whole season,
and it was like the daylight was, it was a night shoot, and it was the daylight was coming up, so we were having to rush to get this phone booth.
They kept putting like these flats up.
Yeah,
it was like the sun. It was like 6 in the morning, and we were like supposed to be in the middle of the night.
We had to wrap that night.
Yeah, so but that was the last scene that we shot for the whole season.
Yeah. So that was kind of special as well, yeah.
Yeah.
And I have to end it there.
Oh.
Any news of season 2?
I wish.
It'll happen.
Yeah. From your mouth, my friend. Call up Netflix. What's good?
Thank you for coming.
So that was Emmy Raver-Lampman and Tom Hopper from The Umbrella Academy. Umbrella Academy, of course, on Netflix. One of the best comic book adaptations I've seen in a very, very long time. I would urge you to go watch it. It's superb. Go and check it out on Netflix right now. Next up, we have some highlights for next week on TV. Highlights for next week on TV. We have a new show starting called Project Blue Book. This is Aidan Gillian and Michael Mullarky in a drama based on the US Air Force real life attempts to disprove the existence of little green men. That's coming to Sci-Fi on the 27th of March at, it's 2 a.m. and then it's getting like regularly run at 9 p.m. So Sci-Fi UK for that on the 27th of March. Looks like it could be kind of interesting, that one. The Good Fight season 3, that's returning to Morfort on the 28th of March at 9 p.m. Jane the Virgin, fifth and final season of that, comes onto Netflix on the 28th of March as well. There is a new show called Dead Pixels. That is coming to Channel 4 on the 28th of March at 9:30. This is about a group of people who play MMOs, work in an office, and it's about their sort of office life and their obsession with this MMORPG. I've interviewed the guys from it. There is an interview going up later in this week, a written interview which will go up on the website. Really great. It comes from John Brown, who is the guy that wrote Loaded and Fresh Meat and Veep, so it's that sort of type of humour. It's really funny. They did a couple of these things called Blaps, which I think went up online on the All4 channel, so they've done sort of some little mini kind of episodes of it, but this is going to be a full season of it. But that's Dead Pixels, Channel 4, 28th of March at 9:30 for that. 28th of March at 9 o'clock over on E4, we have the return of Brooklyn Nine-Nine for its sixth season, which I know lots of people will be very happy about. We've got Santa Clarita Diet, that is starting its third season on Netflix on the 29th of March. That's back. The Gadget Show, if you're into your gadgets, on Channel 5, that's on 29th of March at 7 p.m. That's returning. Hannah, which is this new high concept thriller for Amazon Prime. This is follows the journey of an extraordinary young girl who's raised in a forest as she evades the relentless pursuit of an off-book CIA agent and tries to unearth the truth behind who she is. That arrives on the 29th of March on Amazon Prime. It's called Hannah. Mission Ignition, coming to Channel 4 on the 30th of March. That's at 8:30 p.m. This is it sounds a bit like Scrap Heap Challenge, kind of. It's two teams of amateur car enthusiasts with the opportunity to drive off in their green car with the slight problem that they have to build their dream car first. One of the hosts of that is Take That, Howard Donald. Which, although that sounds like a slightly off the wall choice, apparently he's an amateur racing driver as well, which I didn't realize, but there you go. So Mission Ignition, that's called season one of that, Channel 4, on the 30th of March at 8:30 p.m. Then Line of Duty, that is back on the 31st of March on BBC One at 9 o'clock for its fifth season. And that is everything for this week, unless you've got anything else you want to add.
I think you've covered everything very succinctly.
Good. So if they want to find you and stuff from Comic Con and all that things, where can they find you?
I can be found on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter and Instagram, all as Trista Bytes, and Bytes spelt like the computer game because I'm just that geeky and thought I'd put a pun in the spelling of my name. I put up videos every Friday about geeky things, including retro gaming, indie comics, and events and so forth. And I also sometimes get to put some articles up onto geektown.co.uk as well.
Yes, you do. So that's Trista Bytes with a Y if you want to go and find her. For us, throughout the week, go and check out the website at geektown.co.uk to see all the latest air data information. If you want to get in touch with your questions and comments, email us on podcast@geektown.co.uk. Leave a message on the website post. Find us at Geektown on Twitter, on Facebook at facebook.com/geektown, and YouTube at youtube.com/geektown. That's going to be worth checking this week because there are lots of interviews going up. And also Instagram, which is Geektown UK. Loads and loads of cosplay photos going up over the next week. So go and check out those. That is everything. We shall see you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.
I've not got any silly little sounds for you this week because I've only just managed to get the soundboard reset up. So you've escaped being insulted by my sounds.
Oh dear. What a shame. I'm completely distraught.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.